On today's episode of State Your Line, we have Kim Hollerin. She is the managing partner of Capital Grille on the Plaza to talk about what it's been like managing a restaurant in the pandemic. We've also got the Kansas City End of the Week, openings and closings around Kansas City, and the mixed plate of people you will be spending Thanksgiving with. This episode of State Your Line is brought to you by Catherine Lee. She is a global real estate advisor at Bash & Co. Sotheby's International Realty. She is your resource for all things Kansas City real estate and home ownership. She's a Kansas City native, and she can help you out on the Kansas or Missouri side of the state line. She can help you if you're buying a home or if you're selling a home. And right now, she's offering a free market analysis on your home. So give her a call at 913-530-1847, or you can find her on Instagram at Kathy_Lee5. And tell her State Your Line sent you. Welcome into State Your Line, a podcast for Kansas Cityans by Kansas Cityans. We are the Ritz Brothers. Today is November 24th, and I love having Patrick Mahomes on my team. I mean, was there any doubt? Like, were you nervous?
Yes.
Why don't you believe in Patrick Mahomes?
I wasn't nervous once we got the ball with you know, a minute 30 left or whatever it was, but
yeah, that's what I meant.
No, the game winning drive. No, I wasn't nervous. I knew we were gonna get into field goal. I don't know. I must have done some poor math in my head too, because I thought we were down by 4, and I thought we needed the touchdown. So I was like, oh, okay. I still felt good about it, but I think it was after like the second pass, I saw we were only down 3, and I was like, oh, well, sheesh. I mean, yeah. this is easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think my favorite part about before we get into the rest of the game, that winning touchdown pass, is how Mahomes took Jonathan Abram off his line and threw it right into the place where Jonathan Abram, my least favorite player in the NFL, was supposed to be.
Yeah, so, and it's
that made my heart feel good.
It's really incredible the standard that we hold Mahomes to, because he's set that standard. But like, mm-hmm. him and Jonathan Abrams have like pretty much the same NFL experience and are like the same age. And you know, Jonathan Abrams made a rookie mistake or a young player mistake. Someone who is trying to be a little too aggressive, the mistake of a young player. And mm-hmm. We just like don't expect that out of Mahomes. Like, we expect Mahomes to make young players look foolish. And we don't expect Mahomes to make any mistakes that young players make. And Mahomes is like, 25, you know?
Yeah.
Like his standard is just so high. And it's a good thing. You know, I'm not saying like, that's a bad thing or anything, but yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah. And then just the last note at the end of the game, Derek Carr with that last interception, he literally shrugged it off and was like, well, you know, I had to try to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, well, that's your standard, I guess. Like, well, I tried
mm-hmm.
and it got picked off, but what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's just like, well, I don't know. You've shredded that defense all night.
Yeah.
Drive down the field and win the game.
Remember
like,
that
don't
time?
Be like, meh.
Yeah, remember you that know? Time in the AFC Championship game when Pat had a pretty similar situation, 30 seconds to mm-hmm. go, and took the team down, and we got into field goal range and went to overtime against the Patriots. Yeah, that was his first year as a starter. So, different standard. The rest of the game, obviously, I was miserable.
You're ready to fight. You're ready to fight Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu. I just know it.
I just
know you are.
It's just not even, it shouldn't only be me, right? And it seems like, you know.
Oh, it's caught on Twitter.
A lot of
people are noticing.
Yeah. Tyrann Mathieu just has not played well. And I don't know if he's hurt. You know, he's one of those guys that has been pretty consistent his entire career. So when he starts to play like this and play poorly and play like he doesn't want to play football, then you ask those questions. So he gets kind of the benefit of the doubt as, you know, maybe he's injured as opposed to maybe he just doesn't have it anymore. I guess you can say the same thing about Frank Clark, but I'm getting to the point where I just don't think Frank Clark is very good. And it's hard to it's hard to see it. It's really hard to see him being a good player. Not even just a player worth, you know, we've talked about it in every single episode at this point, every single week, what we're paying him and the draft capital that we gave up. But it's just hard to see him as a good player. And the sacks that he has gotten this year, which I think there's like, it's like two, and the sacks that he got in the playoffs last year were more about
coverage.
Effort, I guess, not giving up on the play and coverage. And but they weren't like, I beat my guy right away, I got to the quarterback right away. Like a lot of those sacks that ended games, those huge plays in the Super Bowl and the games leading up to that, they were like him giving effort and not giving up on the play and eventually getting a sack. But it wasn't like, I just beat my guy and I was just better than the left tackle or the right tackle and just got to the quarterback. You see that from good pass rushers. You don't see that.
Yeah, if you think of, I mean, because the pass rushers I remember watching most are Justin Houston and Tom Bolley. Mm-hmm. And even when they're not getting to the quarterback, they're making tackles look stupid. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if they're not getting to the quarterback, you can make a case for holding almost every time.
Exactly.
Frank Clark tries to do the, you know, shoulder dip, get up, and beat his guy around the corner every time, and he just gets pushed upfield.
He looks like D Ford.
It's so predictable. Yeah, it's just so predictable and not effective at all. It's brutal. I just had to stop watching him because I was like, all right, let's watch Frank Clark for a little bit and see what the hell he's doing. And it's just every time trying to get around the edge, not able to do it, and getting pushed upfield.
And I get it. We won the game, but we won because of one person. That wasn't a team victory. It was not a team victory. We won because we have Patrick Mahomes and other teams don't. So if people are listening to this and be like, well, we won, you know, you gotta look at that. No, that's the exact opposite of what we need to do. We can't, and the team shouldn't look at it as a victory. And I really hope that they, you know, it looked like Tyrann Mathieu tweeted he played horrible afterwards, so he admitted that himself. There's something going on with the defense. I don't know. They seem a little out of sync, but they need to be, the defense needs to be talked to by the media, talked to by their coaches as if they lost that game, because the defense did everything they could to lose that game. So when they're in meetings this week, when they go on TV shows this week, when they go on radio shows this week, they need to be talked to and held accountable as if they lost that game, because that's how they should feel. They should feel like they lost that game because they tried to. And it's only because we have Patrick Mahomes and other teams don't that we won that game. That's the only reason why. It wasn't a team win. It was the exact opposite of a team win.
Yeah, watching Tyrann Mathieu try to tackle people, like the saying, it takes one to know one, like reminded me of this, because like watching him try to tackle, like when I used to have to play defense, like that's how I tried to tackle. And you might be able to relate to this too, Danny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when it's like, okay, I'm going to just make it look like I tried to tackle him without actually having to tackle him. Mm-hmm. So people can't say I didn't try, but like I knew how to like try enough just to make it look like I tried, but I didn't actually want to get hit or like hit them.
No, I wanted to be Rudy. So I tried to give like full effort and always lower.
I just tried to make it look like I was actually trying to tackle somebody and then get like juked out on purpose or something. So I just didn't have to tackle him. And that's what Tyrann Mathieu was doing.
Yeah. I mean,
that move because I've done that move.
Mm-hmm. And there's some real questions that need to be asked. Like, and I don't think, I don't know if it's because Andy Reid is such a pro in the press conference and he never reveals anything. But our Chiefs media needs to hold our team more accountable, right? Like they need
Chris Jones and Legarius Sneed fighting on the sideline.
Yeah, Andy Reid wasn't even asked about it in the post game press conference. No one in the media asked Andy Reid about that incident on the sideline. Something's going on there. Why is Thornhill playing 11 snaps? Something's going on there. Why is Hardman playing 10 snaps? Something's going on there. Why is Nick Kizer getting 20 freaking snaps? Why there's a lot of questions that need to be asked that I just don't feel like we have answers to, and it's frustrating. And on top of all of that,
it's time to apply for credentials, I think.
There you go. Yeah. Let us in those Zoom meetings. Yeah. I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. I'm sure that you can't ask the questions that you want to via Zoom that you would be able to ask in person. But it's just so much mystery going on with the team, I feel like. And especially the snap counts, like who's getting snap counts and who isn't. And no one really knows why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Travis Kelce got all the snap counts. He should win Offensive Player of the Year. What if we have Mahomes win MVP and Travis Kelce Offensive Player of the Year?
Mm-hmm.
That would be incredible. And then the last thing, how much does it suck Derek Carr being good?
Yeah.
Like, I think he's good.
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing really, really good, and the Raiders, like, are good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're a good team.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As much as it sucks, it's going to be fun. Like, this game was, like, good to hate the Raiders and mean something, like we talked about last week.
That's what I was most mad about, is that we've legitimized Derek Carr to a point. Like, I just, he's the epitome of fringe guy, you know, on Friday beers.
He is
such a fringe guy. Like, I doubt he really has any friends on the team. He's kind of just been that quarterback that, like, Gruden wanted to get rid of when he took over, but he just kind of hung around, and now he's kind of good. And he wants to be, like, tough, and he wants to be thrown around in the same conversations as, like, Rodgers, Mahomes, Wilson, Watson.
He tried to do the Cam Newton thing too, where he was like, "Oh yeah, you know, you've been scouting. Did you notice that?"
Oh, I don't even want to get into it.
Yeah, and then they ran it right into the line, and
it
didn't go anywhere, so it wasn't cool.
That was the most frustrating thing, is we made Derek Carr look good, and I really hate the Raiders again. So that's fun. It is fun to hate the Raiders.
Yeah, that I agree on. All right, so. Also, Sunday, big day in sports for Kansas City. And so, not Patrick Mahomes, not Travis Kelce, not Andy Reid. They're not our Kansas City another week. But it's a guy who saved three consecutive PKs, saved all three of them. Tim Melia is our Kansas City another week for getting us that dub in the playoffs, advancing us to the next round. The guy's incredible in PK situations. And, like, saving a PK is the hardest thing to do in sports, I think. Like, harder than hitting a baseball, I would argue.
Yeah, the percentages
would show that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he went 3-for-3, he's 6-0 in his career in PK situations, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. So Sporting Kansas City, the playoffs started. We won the first game. It was a crazy game. Did you see the game?
No,
the highlights.
Yeah.
We'll
get to why I didn't. But San Jose is like right south of me, about 5 minutes away, and the town was dead after that game.
Mm.
They were very heartbroken in San Jose.
You hate to see it. So we were. It was 2-2 going into the extra time, and we scored a goal in the 92nd minute. So 2 minutes of extra time. There was only supposed to be 4 minutes of extra time, but the referee let it go on partly because of our goal celebration, and that kind of added on to the extra time. But then San Jose scored a goal in the 97th minute to tie it up 3-3. And I think like every goal was scored by a former Sporting Kansas City player, I think. I could have just completely made that up, but the names were familiar, so I don't know anyone else in MLS other than Sporting KC players, so that made me think of it. But crazy game, and then Tim Melia, I saw a funny picture on Twitter I found a photo of Tim Melia's high school yearbook picture, and it was just a picture of a brick wall.
Deece.
I saw the picture of KC memes. I love it.
I saw a picture yearbook. Of Johnny Russell chugging a Mick Ultra on the field post game, like caught one from a fan and cracked it open, and here we go. Like,
That's exactly what we said. Johnny Russell was when we interviewed Ali Trost. We said, "Yeah, he's the guy who will be smoking a cigarette for PKs and just toss it on the floor and then let one rip into the other corner." And he did it. His penalty was incredible. So, congrats to Sporting KC advancing. Kev, this weekend, Mizzou won.
Oh, gosh.
Tottenham won. And Tottenham is in first place in the Premier League. Sporting KC won and advanced, and the Chiefs won and beat the Raiders. So I don't know what I'm in store for this week, but some heartbreak is coming my way.
Yeah, I think K-State, I don't think they played this week.
Yeah.
So
no, they didn't.
Heartbreak avoided there.
Yeah, it's a really good thing. K-State didn't. I mean, if you look at this.
If they did play, they didn't show up. So
if you look at the total team points on the year, it didn't go up. So you just have to assume that they didn't play.
Yeah, I don't think they played.
Okay.
This week, so. All right, so Kansas City end of the week goes to Tim Melia. Congratulations.
I think that's the second time he's won it, by the way.
Well, I mean, he's just going to keep winning it. I think it is now.
Yeah, I think it was our first ever like Kansas City of the week. We did. We gave it to Tim Melia.
Yeah, I think he did another thing in PKs, like back in the MLS's back tournament.
Yep, that was it.
He won us another game back then. So, all right, let's move into openings this week. This one comes to us from our friends at Swell Spark. It's called Nick of Time, and it is a Christmas-themed escape room.
Yeah.
I mean, we know my thoughts on escape rooms. I don't understand why people would want to be locked in a room. But Christmas-themed? Okay. All right, Basinger, you've got my attention.
Yeah, so this is Swell Spark is the parent company that does the axe throwing, timber and blade and timber, and does Breakout KC, and they built a Christmas themed breakout room. You have to remember when we interviewed them, I mean they create all these puzzles
in-house.
And they create all the props and everything. They build everything themselves, and so.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty cool. I can't imagine what kind of, little plots are there.
It's something about saving Christmas for sure. It's gotta
be. Yeah. Probably sliding down some chimneys, maybe some St. Nick's socks, some socks involved.
Yeah.
What
some
else?
Reindeer puns, Christmas cookies, the Grinch could be involved.
Maybe a Red Ryder BB gun, so you have to sniper a red with a BB gun. You have to sniper a thing to trip a lever or something like that.
Yeah, I can't imagine how much fun they had creating this because we've been in their workshop where literally, I mean, they've got all the machines to create the levers and trap doors and in little boxes that might hold a key. So that'd be pretty fun. I'm sure it'll be.
It's definitely wrapped in a Christmas present. The key. It's like wrapped in a Christmas present.
Yeah, I can see that.
Probably. Probably some like
Home Alone is like the ultimate escape room. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically. Well, it's the opposite of an escape room. It's try not to let anyone in.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
He also escapes. Oh, I wonder if there's a zip line to get out,
like McAllister, and then just when you think you're doomed, the neighbor comes and. Hits the bad guy with the shovel over there.
Yeah, you can solve the puzzle really easily by just walking up to the person checking you in and hitting them with the shovel. That's how you solve it without even have to go into the room.
Yeah, and you might get your hair lit on fire too.
Who knows?
That would be. All right, so Nick of Time is the new breakout room, Breakout KC. All right, next, Travis Kelce is an actor. I have a question mark on the end of this. Well, I didn't think this was real. I thought people were just photoshopping him in.
I did too. Okay. And so there's a new show on Showtime called Moonbase 8, and it's a comedy space show. So it's this, it's got John C. Reilly, it's got Eric from Tim and Eric show.
Good actor.
No, Tim, the shorter one, not the big one. And,
I like the big one.
Not the big one who's in the Aziz.
Master of None.
The other one. Mm-hmm. So Tim.
Okay.
Who's hilarious. And it's got the guy from Portlandia and Saturday Night Live.
Fred Armisen.
Yeah. So Fred Armisen, John C. Reilly, Eric or Tim from Tim and Eric. And then Travis Kelce is in it. And he's just a character in it. And he plays himself. So he plays Travis. We watched the first episode. The first episode is available for free because they want you to watch it. And that's the only episode Travis is in. So you can see it. He does a pretty good job. He plays himself. He plays a linebacker in his prime who's won a championship. Or sorry, not linebacker, tight end. And he's an asshole. Like, he's a huge asshole in it. And so he plays like the asshole role of being like the jock who John C. Reilly, who's the captain, just like, you know, high school nerd jock mentality where Travis Kelce just basically tells him what to do. He does a pretty good job. You know, I'm sure his agent was stoked to get him this, and Travis is just trying to expand his chops a little bit, but he's a real actor in a show. You know, it's easy to see coming, but you know, they can't have him in the entire season. So, you know, they kill him off pretty quickly, but he's funny for the first like 20 minutes of the show. So, I guess I spoiler there, but I mean, it's
yeah, Jang, he just dropped that on us. I was looking at Travis Kelce's IMDb page here, and it has the titles of the episodes of of Catching Kelce. Pretty good. 50 Girls, One Tight End. Backstabbing Besties. Romance at Red Foo's. I don't know what that one is. Walk of Shame. And Who Caught Kelce? A good finale to Catching Kelce.
I can't believe that was a dating show. That was a real life dating show.
50 Girls, One Tight End. Yep. that was the title of the first episode.
Yeah. The guy who created that had some fun with it.
Oh yeah. All right. So those are our openings this week. Closings. This is sad. This was on my mixed plate of best Asian food in Kansas City. Holy shit. This is actually good. Gojo's is closing. Okay, it's not good. All right, I'll retract that. But I have some other news to announce in openings too. All right, Gojo's is closing. And do you know anything about why?
I assume what happened? The pandemic. Okay, yeah. I assume
hard to do hibachi in the pandemic. Yeah,
yeah. I don't think they ever reopened. They temporarily closed, and then I don't think it ever reopened. Yeah, Gojo's is one of those places where you could easily have thought it closed 15 years ago, or you go there like every other week and you're like a regular.
It had been around for 40 years.
Yeah. You're one of two people in Kansas City. You either thought Gojo's closed 15 years ago, and every time you drive by the building, you're just like, oh man, yeah, that restaurant closed a while ago. Because there's no windows, you can't see what's going on in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go every week. I think those are the only two types of people that go to Gojo's.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It was pandemic related, which really is too bad. Sorry. I'll tell you why I got so excited, but that really is too bad.
We all know why you got excited, Kevin. We all know why you got excited.
Closed after 40 years of being open. But I need to know who owns this, because I'm bringing my brunch hibachi concept to it. It's there. It's in Westport. It's already got the hibachi grills. And if someone listening to this does it, I'm going to sue you. So it's my idea. I'm going to do it. Danny, drive by tomorrow. See if there's like a real estate sign out front.
Okay.
And give me the number. I'll call them.
Okay. Do you have any good names for your brunch hibachi spot yet?
I can't share that over the air. But yeah, they're pretty good.
Habrunchy?
They're pretty good. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that was it.
I was like, it's gotta be a pun.
Yeah, it's a brunchy. It's gonna be awesome.
Okay. All right. Some brunch competition over there with Snooze right across the street.
We'll blow them out of the water, no doubt.
Love the confidence.
Snooze's got nothing on us. All right. So that is our closing this week. Again, I'm sorry for the insensitivity. 40 years. Thank you, Gojo. The yellow butter garlic cream sauce that you put on everything. The goat. Truly delicious.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's move into a little what we try this week. I got to try what we call Poor Man's Pebble Beach. Pebble Beach, for those of you who don't know, is like one of the most famous golf courses in the world. It's in Monterey, California, just south of like the Bay Area. Beautiful golf course. It's a public course. It costs about $450 to play that course. Well, just up the road, there's a little course called Pacific Grove. It costs $75 to play.
Ooh, that's like the most expensive round in Kansas City.
Yeah, and it was very accessible. Booked a little Friday tea time and went down there and played golf right on the ocean. I was telling the group that I was playing with, I was like, when I play golf on the water, it's the Lake of the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the biggest body of water I've, like, hit a golf shot next to. So this is, like, you know, a little bit different. So
you got
to
tell them, like, there's a course down at the Lake of the Ozarks called Sycamore Creek, which the only bodies of water are just fish farms. And there's just catfish farms. And they're just, like, little, like, plotted areas. And that's Lake of the Ozarks golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was trying to make it sound classier.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, a beautiful, beautiful course. It was like kind of a nice, you know, exclamation point, to the end of my time here. This is the last, or I'm going to be on the road next episode, but last episode I'm recording from California. So I'll be leaving Friday after Thanksgiving. So Cali Kev is moving back to Kansas City. I told you all I'd come back, but playing golf along the ocean. Absolutely beautiful, incredible.
Good. Glad you got to do it. What'd you shoot?
Yeah. I shot an 89.
Hey-o, bring it 90.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was a par 69, but
nice.
I'll take it. I'll take it. You know, what happened on the back nine was that was all along the ocean. And, you know, you can get distracted staring at the ocean. And then
especially us Midwestern folk, we just. Yeah. I never seen water that big.
And then instead of having trees, like in between the holes, it's just like giant sand traps full of weeds and brush. Mm-hmm. And so if you hit one into there, you're just screwed. If you do it twice in a row, then that's even worse.
That's a double.
You end up tripling a couple holes.
So. All right. I tried something very Kansas City-ian this week.
Mm-hmm.
I've never tried this before. I smoked meat. Not a drug. No, we're not a drug podcast.
We're not a drug podcast.
I smoked a pork butt. Actually, it's a pork shoulder. Do you know? So when people are making pulled pork, I always thought it was pork butt. Mm-hmm. It's pork shoulder.
Pork butt is pork shoulder. They're the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
You sure same about thing. That?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I guess it's just back shoulders. I guess your hips. Your hips are really just... bottom shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, smoked the pork butt / pork shoulder on a Weber bullet grill. It's the first time I'd ever done anything like it. Had some help, had a couple people come over, and it's one of these great things because you just have to sit outside and drink beer and monitor a grill.
Which, what do you got going? You got a electric temperature like thing that you're putting in there?
Yeah, I have a little gauge in there that that is Bluetooth that hooks up to my phone so I can kind of track it. It can warn me if it gets out of gets too high or too low. But yeah, it was very enjoyable. I would do it again. Pork butt turned out great. The pulled pork, we made some Sandies and loved it. So I smoked meat for the first time ever. As a Kansas Cityan. So,
hey, congratulations. Way to pop the cherry there.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about having pulled pork, too, you can never have enough. It goes great with any leftovers. A couple pro tips. It makes a great quesadilla. And then you mix a little sour cream and barbecue sauce.
Okay.
Dip it in there.
Might
another good tip. Make some macaroni and cheese. Dump it in there. Also a very good way to use it.
Might have that
and
for
then,
dinner.
You know, yeah. Very versatile in the leftover department. All right, so that is what we tried this week. This week, we get to talk with Kim Halloran. She is the managing partner at Capital Grill on the Plaza. Danny and I were curious, what's it like to run a restaurant through a pandemic? So we figured we'd talk to one of the most famous, well-known restaurants in Kansas City. So Kim was generous enough to walk us through kind of what it's been like through this past year. All right, today we are joined by Kim Holleran. She is the managing partner at Capital Grill on the Plaza. Kim, thanks for joining us. Definitely a interesting time to be in the restaurant business right now. I guess we'll start with, you know, some new rules or ordinances came out in Kansas City. Kind of talk us through those and what it looks like to eat in a restaurant right now in Kansas City.
Absolutely. Hi, guys. You know, we have been open and going throughout this entire pandemic, and things have shifted every few months. Obviously, with holidays coming up, I think that it was important for there to be a change put in place, and it was rather quickly. So starting Friday last week, the party size groups of 10 is the maximum number, trying to keep things a little bit more protected. Obviously, they're finding, you know, the more people are together, families and intimate settings, regardless at home, at restaurants, anywhere it is, they want to keep that number to a minimum. Occupancy is still 50% and distancing is still 6 feet. So there's definitely some opportunity, you know, to have everybody come in, spread things out, keep a nice flow in restaurants and taverns. But the curfew now is 10 o'clock. So it cuts into that later having fun, having drinks. You know, they want to protect that a little bit more as well. Them being the mayor and the health officials that are guiding him through his new changes. But I think he did a good job. You know, we're seeing closures all around the country, and we're really grateful to be open. We don't get the luxury of having a patio at this point of the year, maybe here and there on a day, but we're pretty limited to go or in restaurant dining.
And you talked about a little bit, you know, are you guys, like, in the Kansas City Greater Restaurant Association, are you guys in contact, like helping each other out, giving each other ideas on how to work with these new kind of restrictions, or what's that support been like just from the restaurant industry? Are you guys all kind of working together to try to get through this?
You know, we work together a lot, and it's so confusing because you've got Kansas, Cass County, Platt, you know, all of these surrounding areas. And so as these regulations are hitting, there's an enormous amount of confusion. And so we've really leaned in with the mayor. And as this started months ago, we had a task force with the mayor and asked those very specific questions so that we could get the answers to the right people. There's still, I would say, 15 to 20 phone calls or texts a day, just trying to clarify a few things. And we meet at least once or twice a week just to go over it, compare notes, get best practices. I mean, there's workarounds in any industry, and that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to stay within the guidelines and do the right thing, because as we all know, there is an uptick in our community, and we need our teams and our families and ourselves to be safe. So getting the clarity for each area has been really critical for us to have, you know, resources in the industry to go to.
And obviously you guys, Capital Grill, I mean, you have locations all over the country. Are you hearing different things from different managers across the country as far as things that are working in different regions? And then are you kind of, are other people envious of you guys because you get to stay open and because you have a pretty good working relationship with the powers that be, the health department and the mayor?
You know, I talk to other restaurant managers in our industry, in our city, but also in our brand and our company. And there is not a lot of similarities. You know, St. Louis is the closest city to us, and they're completely shut down. So they're back on curbside, and they may have patio seating for restaurants. Obviously, it's probably too cold. So,
yeah.
But, you know, there is not a lot of similarities. There's each area is kind of going on their own health advisors. Mm-hmm. And I thought we did a great job, though, in Kansas City. If you saw about a week and a half ago, the mayor, as well as city officials from Kansas, like the greater Kansas City area, all met together and created a guideline. And this was with hand in hand with the health departments. And I think KU, I don't know who mm-hmm. else was on that meeting or on that board, but they came out with some really good resources and tools for everybody to use. And it at least got all of us on more of the same page, because we aren't seeing that across the country. It's kind of mm-hmm. different everywhere.
Yeah. That's great to hear. That makes me like proud of the effort that Kansas City is doing, because it sounds like it could be going worse elsewhere. Well, thanks for that. I do want to, we do have some questions about Capitol Grille and kind of everything you guys do, the legacy that you have here in Kansas City. But first, I need to know, how do you spell grill, and why is there an E at the end of sometimes there's a grill, it's grille, or sometimes it's grill. And then I always get confused on how to spell capital as well. So I really like if it's an OL or an AL. So I need some help spelling. Why is there an E at the end of grill?
Well, so capital itself is uh-huh. spelled with an A because it's more of a like a presence, a financial
okay
connection, right? So when you OL go in the
is like a building.
Yeah. So or it's just more of a place, right? It's the okay. capital. And then grill, it's a restaurant, it's not a tavern, it's not a wood-fired grill, it's not a burger joint, it's more elegant. Refined.
Add an E to the end of it. And
exactly.
She's good. That yeah. always confused me because I never knew why it was Grille, but I had to look it up. And how long has Capitol Grille been on the plaza? I feel like that that restaurant there on the plaza, it has such a legacy. How long have you guys been on the plaza?
So 20 years.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, and we moved to the new location. It's been 15 months. So last mm-hmm. year in August, we moved a few blocks over because Nordstrom's is going in our old location, which now is paused due to COVID. But, you know, they're still getting some of it worked on. But the new restaurant's just beautiful. Yes. I was nervous at first. And now we just have so much more of an open space mm-hmm. with this happening. I mean, I just am grateful every day because we are able to space things out much easier.
What was the, so obviously you were around, you've been with Capitol Grille at this location for 10 years. So you were around during that decision to move locations on the plaza. How did you guys pick that new spot? And did you, you know, when Williams-Sonoma was in there, were you like, I have no clue how this is going to work, how this is going to turn into a restaurant?
Yeah, you know, that was all way above my pay grade. So it was kind of like, here's what's happening.
Okay.
But I went over to Williams-Sonoma 3 or 4 times and I was looking around, and I'm sure the people that worked there were like, why is this lady walking square footage, looking behind doors, trying to see how deep it was? Mm-hmm. And then shortly after, I found out we were taking Williams-Sonoma and Tesla's space, mm-hmm. which between the two, then I thought the opposite. I thought, how big is this place going to be? You know, and pictured it all in my mind just to get there and realize we have a full basement, which is where our prep kitchen and coolers and, you know, so it's definitely better than I could have imagined it. But I'm trying to picture it, you know, mm-hmm. A good friend and restaurateur in the city said something very nice when we moved. Kevin Pastilli said, you know, now you're like the welcome mat to the plaza. And yeah. And it feels that way. You know, everybody comes in and it's easy to see it. We have a great presence, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the characteristics that, do you feel like the vibe of the restaurant has changed greatly? Because as a patron, I definitely feel like it's just gotten a nice upgrade, and it it feels more like modern and more like for the, you know, 2020 and beyond. Whereas the old restaurant, it kind of felt a little like, okay, I could see my grandparents dining here for sure. But I feel like the upgrade has kind of changed the vibe a little bit. I assume that was all part of the plan, right?
Absolutely. And the gentleman who did the design actually came to Kansas City and said, this is such, you know, a great restaurant. We don't want to make it look like just anything. We want to combine, right, what we're doing now and what you have here. And he did a great job. He brought a lot of similar features and tones, and it's definitely, you know, a sexier, more sleek restaurant, but there's that touch of, you know, comfort in the color of the booths or the way that the lounge is seated. Having windows is great, you know, but it's just, it definitely has a fresh, fun feeling. And the bar is just such an impressive layout. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, it does look great. I was looking at your menu and looking at all the Capital Grille menus, really, because I was just very curious. We call it a Kansas City strip when on the menu here in Kansas City. But then I was looking at all the other locations and it says New York strip. Is there actually, like, what is the difference? Is it just, is there a difference? And what can we do to get other places to call it a Kansas City strip? I don't I don't want a New York strip. I want a Kansas City strip. So is there a difference between the two?
You know, it depends on who you ask. Not really. It's the same thing. So we're, you know, based out of the Northeast, but we've always had Kansas City strip. And it's interesting because even some of the restaurants closer to us have asked, like, do we want to call it Kansas City strip, New York strip? We have a lot of cattlemen who come in the restaurants and we take it personal. You know, we actually during COVID had, you know, pre-printed menus. And I think one time we printed it with New York and I was laughing. I said, we are not going to sell that steak today.
Nope.
But there's restaurants in Kansas City who call it a New York strip, but we've always, had a Kansas City strip.
While we're talking about like cuts of meat and what you guys are known for, obviously the steak, what does dry aging do to a steak and kind of what's the process and why do you do it?
So we have a dry aging room at the restaurant and it's humidity and temperature controlled. So there's just, you know, the perfect amount of humidity that can get on the meat. And as it ages, it breaks down that meat to be more tender. In my opinion, it's a, you know, preferred way to age your meat because as soon as you cut it and carve it, the butcher gets it ready, you take it up and you put it on, it's already kind of broken down. So it's just more tender. And the flavor, I think, is a little richer. So it feels like it's, you know, worth that little bit of money that you're going to spend when you go out for a great dinner.
Yeah, I recently saw a restaurant where they had their, I don't know if this is the thing, it was the first time I'd seen it, where they had their dry aging steaks on display, and it worked. I was very hungry. I didn't order it, so maybe it didn't work in that way, but that might just be a more me thing. But it looked delicious. Can people take a peek into that process at all, or is that like behind the scenes?
You know, there definitely are people that have, but it's more behind the scenes because it's not that attractive. I mean, it's whole loins of
beef. It looks sexy to me.
You know, I mean, I think it's great. I go in there every day, but in general, it just depends on who. Like some of the national beef guys and farmers will come up and they always go in and take a look, but it's more about just not having people in that space because you want it, you know, to not be
The
word I'm looking for, like other people in that space. You just leave it alone.
People do like picking out their steaks. You know, if you go to like the butcher and you're picking up your own steaks, you want to look at them and you want to have a choice. Right now during COVID, you guys are kind of becoming a butcher shop too. Is that right? Where you're selling the meat for people to take home and cook?
We do. So, and to that note, we take steaks out to the table and we'll let people pick them. I just mean in that dry age room, but we are doing butchered meats to go, and it's pretty popular. It's not as easy as we all thought it would be to just grab whatever we wanted at a store right now. So some people will pick up dinner, grab some steaks for tomorrow, you know, or the holiday season's coming. We've had quite a few people buy those butcher boxes for, you know, their team, their management team, admin, as a gesture because they aren't taking them out to dinner this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves over the next month.
Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, you're getting the same cuts of meat that you guys cook in the restaurant. It's always so hard to recreate that restaurant taste though of a steak. Like, is there some kind of secret that I'm missing out on if I'm cooking a steak, or is there something that I could like throw in my cast iron to maybe give me some more like of that restaurant flavor? Like, I just need to add more butter and garlic, or what should I be doing?
You know, in general, I think people just they're afraid to cook with heat because they don't want to overcook it. And really with steak, you want a really hot either pan or broil or grill. You want to get a good sear on it because you do need to let it rest after you cook it. You know, we season it and grill it, but even butter, steak butter, whatever it is you want to put on, that doesn't go on till after.
Okay.
So you pull it off, you let it rest.
I think I just need to, like you said, not be afraid of the heat, open up all the windows in the house and just fire that cast iron up real hot.
Yep.
You guys also do a lot of seafood. We're in Kansas City, you know, obviously landlocked, far from the sea. How do you guys get your seafood? How do you certify or, you know, brag about it being fresh seafood? What's that process look like from I order a piece of seafood, how does it get to my plate?
Yeah, so we order our seafood every day. Luckily.
Just get it like helicoptered in or something sweet like that?
Yeah. It, on a private plane on the roof.
Yeah, it just lands on the roof.
They ship it straight in, you know, styrofoam, ice down packs, and we can call it in at noon on Monday and have it at our door Tuesday at 11 o'clock. So all of the different, the vendor we use, they get direct from the ports and then it just comes straight to us. Obviously, you know, there's some items that during COVID we didn't carry as much of because it's just, you know, perishable. But it's interesting because people missed seafood. They missed steak, but I mean, oysters, like flying out of the restaurant, they love it. And I think because we couldn't get out and have it for a while, and it's difficult to do at home. And so people really did come in for seafood. We sell a lot of it, more than I can recall in the last 10 years.
Is there anything on the menu in Kansas City that isn't on the menu at other Capital locations? Do we have any like special, like, okay, this just
Kansas City Strip.
The Kansas City Strip. I guess that's.
I would say the off menu things that we can't get rid of, you know, that people just come in and assume we have is baked potatoes.
Okay.
So we always at least have a few. Lamb was another one. Lamb lollipops. People, you know, love meat. It's Kansas City. The big tomahawk chop. Now some of the other restaurants have it, but we've had it the whole time.
Yeah.
Steaks as big as you can get them.
I've seen the tomahawk.
Lamb. Lamb is like everyone wants it.
One time I had a, like, I think it was a mushroom bisque soup there.
Yeah.
And it was like the greatest soup I've ever had. And it must've been a seasonal thing because I haven't been able to get it since.
I know we haven't had it back, but I miss it. It's so good.
Okay.
I'm
so
gonna tell Chef about it. I'll see what we can do. Yeah.
So maybe that can be an off menu item that, you know, just the real ones know how to order it. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead, Kev.
I imagine that, you know, obviously this has the pandemic and how restaurants have operated has certainly changed now. And I feel like it's probably going to be different, you know, going forward from here. If you were like designing a restaurant nowadays, would you, you know, have as much dine-in space, or would you feel like you'd want to focus more on to-goes, or like, how would you kind of set up a dining experience knowing what you know now?
You know, it's interesting because I go in restaurants all, and I'm super critical, right? And
yeah, so I know I can't about imagine myself, trying to eat the out. Worst.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I feel
knowing what bad you know, trying family. To enjoy yeah. a meal yeah. out.
So I think people trust the restaurants in Kansas City, but everywhere, because we're restaurants, right? We clean everything. Everything is temperature controlled, you know. Rotate, like there's just so many systems in restaurants. But you look at this pandemic, and what's the biggest hurdle? It's comfort, right? For our teams, for our guests. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the restaurants that can do to go and be efficient with it are going to win, which is great. But it's hard to operate both. It's not too hard. I mean, you can run a restaurant and run to go. But depending on how much seating you have, you know, there's also staffing issues and bottom, you know, people are trying to hold on to a little bit of money in case there was another closure or God forbid they get sick or, you know, so there's all these other variables where, you know, it's like a conversation I had with my parents. I said, what are you guys doing for food? You know, they said, well, we only go in this one restaurant to get to go. I said, don't go in. They don't want you in there. If you're just going to get to go or you're doing curbside, they would prefer it. Where people think that's an inconvenience to have them run it out. Well, you're dealing with occupancy and you don't want people standing there without masks and you're answering the phone and you're boxing up to go. So having a good system for to go or a restaurant that's small enough that you can really focus on both operations and execution. And if you can do as much in to go as you can dining in, then you're making up for that other 50%, right? So, you know, you look at some of these brands that are real, you know, kind of redefining what they're doing, and you'll notice most of them are going with a smaller build and less seating, but the ability to do more to go. And there's restaurants that are doing better during this pandemic. Not many, because it's still, you know, an impact, but fast food and just some of these quick casual, they're doing all right. And they're working hard for it, but, you know, it's paying off.
Yeah. So go ahead, Danny.
I was going to ask if you guys are doing any like carry out specials or something like that for Thanksgiving. And then second question is like, did you ever think as the managing partner of Capital Grille, you would have something called a carryout special? Because it just, you know what I mean? It sounds like a Domino's commercial, and you guys have had to adjust to do things like that. But obviously it's the right move to do, but you probably never thought a Capital Grille would have a carryout special.
We've learned so much this, this last 8 months. I mean, we did Easter, Mother's Day to go. And we still have, you know, plaza lights coming on. There's not a ceremony or any of that going on, but it's a lot of family's tradition. And so we'll definitely have a handful of people who can't come in that we'll be getting food together for. Right now we're doing a sides bundle. So kind of like you're making the turkey, you can pick up all of the sides already prepared the day before. And then you have your stuffing, your mashed potatoes, and, you know, makes everything simple. And especially because people aren't dying to line up in, you know, 4 hour lines at the grocery store, I think it's helpful. Yeah. And that's a lot of it is what can we do to make life easier for everybody who's dealing with all this change, right? So there's people who aren't comfortable eating out. There's people who can't. There's people who, you know, are homeschooling, working from home. There's just so many things. So trying to constantly come up with things that we think will help the community as well as keep, you know, people coming in the restaurant, but make sure we're being smart business people.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you alluded to it earlier, when you go out to eat and it's like, I'm sure you're noticing everything. Our mom who worked in the restaurant was the exact same way. What's your biggest pet peeve when you're out? Like, if you see something, is it like, the restaurant being set up in a way that isn't efficient for servers to get around? Is it, you know, kind of what's your one thing that
I'm going to guess? I'm going to guess for okay. Kim. Is it staff on their phones?
Oh man, that almost came out of my mouth. When you see someone like right next to you and they're sitting there on their phone. But I'll say more than that, I hate when you walk in a restaurant and there's nothing happening and there's just a huge lag to even get to a table. Mm-hmm. So you walk in and no one's really sure what to do. And they're all just waiting, you know, 5 minutes to walk you 5 feet to the table when there's no one even seated yet. Or when you go in a restaurant and they're only seating in one area. Uh-huh. Like, I'm going to see everybody right next to each other because that one server is working. You can't do that.
Uh-huh. So you're the, out, guys. Kim, you're the person in your group of friends though, because I'm this person as well, having worked in a restaurant where if I do walk into a restaurant and nothing's happening up front, like I'll go find someone or I'll go talk to the bartender and just be like, hey, you know, we just got here. No one's helped us. You know, what's going on? The other people that are just like standing around, like, what do I do?
My husband is always like, mom just put her manager hat on. I'm like, here's what we're going to do. Can we sit right there? Perfect. And then we're going to do this.
Yep.
And I just kind of take it over nicely. So I know that my experience isn't going to be horrible, because then what do? I can't say anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be that person. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to be John Taffer and walk in there and shut it down or anything like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not going to do that. All right. Sometimes I want to. I have left places before. I'm like, I think we're just going to go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens. All right. So Thanksgiving, you've got sides and everything ready for people. You're still open for dining in, and you got some carry out as well down at Capitol Grill. So be sure to check them out. Kim, thanks so much for joining us this week. We really appreciate your time.
Hey guys, thanks. Nice meeting you both. And if you ever need anything, let me know.
Oh, we will.
Careful saying that to me.
All right. Thanks to Kim for joining us this week. Cool to see that, you know, at least Kansas City is able to keep some restaurants open right now, and keeping, you know, people some good food for Thanksgiving too. I mean, think about getting sides straight from one of the best restaurants in Kansas City.
I mean, homemade sides too are good. I mean, I'm not discounting them.
Yeah, they are.
Thanksgiving is though, it's the holiday that is just dishes, just so many dishes. Cause when you make sides and stuff like that, you just have dishes galore. I still have a broken dishwasher, by the way. And also I don't know where you're going to cut the interview at the end, but she did say, if you guys need anything, let me know. So
I was like a 14-ounce Kansas City strip.
I've never eaten
at Capitol Grill.
I'll take a free meal. How about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe next time we'll go down there and see her, and you know, who knows? Maybe, you know, she'll give us maybe an appetizer or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just something to snack on. All right. So next up, we've got a little Deets on the Streets.
Danny, I feel like combining. Kev, we need a theme song for this. So when you go like Deets on the streets, it's like, I don't know, something jazzy, some piano.
Yeah,
go
I heard
freemusic.com or something again.
Okay, yeah, someone emailed me about they make sounds for podcasts. Maybe I'll plug one of those in there.
All right, today we are talking about Warnell. I can't believe we haven't done Warnell Road yet. Yeah, so it's Warnell, not Warnall. People from out of town will always say Warnall, and then you got to smack them. So it's a good excuse to smack someone in the face.
That's how you spot a rookie.
Mm-hmm. John Warnell was born in Kentucky. He moved to Kansas City in 1843. His dad bought some farmland from John McCoy, who we all know. John McCoy is the founder of Westport and basically created really what is now South Kansas City, that area, Westport. He basically was just this is a real bummer of a life this guy led, because
John Warnell,
basically everyone died. He was a farmer. After his mom died, his dad just moved back to Kentucky, and so he got the farm. His brother went on the Oregon Trail. His brother died on the Oregon Trail, I assume from dysentery or a snake bite. Or snake bite.
Forging the river can go wrong as well.
Absolutely. So he got the farm, and his house, you guys know the area I'm talking about, because his house is still there. He built that house in 1858.
On 83rd and State Line, right?
Where? No, it's like 66th and Warnell, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, there's another Warnell something right there.
Yeah, that's not it. And so he had 400 acres. That was all farmland when he bought that and built that house, 400 acres there. He married a woman in 1851. She died later that same year.
Say, she's definitely going to die.
Yeah. He remarried. This time married.
She's probably dead.
Just wait for it. It's even sadder. This time he married Eliza Johnson, daughter of Reverend Thomas Johnson, the namesake of Johnson County. So he marries Eliza Johnson. They have 7 kids. Only 2 lived past the age of 3.
Oof. Jeez.
She died giving birth to the last kid.
Goodness gracious, this guy. And all we did was name a road after him. Man.
Remarries Roma, who is Eliza Johnson's.
Roma Banker? Oh.
No. Roma Johnson. It's Eliza Johnson's cousin. So remarries Roma. They seem to have a decent relationship. No one dies immediately, I guess. And Roma is the one who eventually carried on his legacy and created the museum and kept the house and their family and so on and so forth. So there were Civil War battles fought on his farm, which is wild to think about. And the museum, the John Warnell Museum, is over there. It's right on 66th and Warnell. You've probably driven by it 100 times. The museum does talk a lot about the Civil War, the battles that were fought there, the family. Basically, they were just farmers, really. And John Warnell was a state senator for a little bit in Jeff City. And that's John Warnell. Just tough life. Tough life.
Tough life for John Warnell.
Yeah. Because these are human beings we're talking about. So I don't want to make jokes about the road, the constant reconstruction of Warnell Road, the constant starting over of Warnell Road. I'm not going to make those jokes, Kevin.
Yeah. Because it wouldn't be funny. And John Warnell lost a lot. And even though it was a long, long time ago, a lot of people are just finding out about it. So that means the pain is fresh, even if the deaths happened a long time ago.
Yeah. So John Warnell for
you
guys.
Thank you for your respect.
He had a tough life. It's just wild, how good we are at keeping people alive these days. Very good at it. Very good.
All right. Those are the deets on the street. Next, let's move into a little personal pine tar. Where life's minor inconveniences can sometimes turn into a rather large one. And I don't think there is any better example of that than what happened to me on Sunday. Going out again last weekend in California, so making the most out of it, going to go to Alamere Falls, which is just north of Muir Woods. Beautiful, beautiful part of the country. Saw some pictures, I got to go there. And snap some photos for the gram. So we get there, and once you get to a lot of these hikes, you got no service at all, because you're out in the wilderness. So you're you better have a good plan. We felt confident in our plan. We thought it'd be about 4.5 miles down, about the same back. So maybe about 8 to 9 mile hike. Definitely doable. We get to a point in the trail, and it's a 50-50 chance, left or right. And that can make or break things. Should have gone left. We went right. And that doubled our trail route. to a full 16 miles. So I don't know if you guys have ever watched 16 miles in a pair of hiking boots that you've worn, I don't know, 10 times before. That's going to hurt your toes. That's going to hurt your feet a lot. Let me just say it's a real relationship tester.
Yes, you know. I believe that. You're with your girlfriend on this hike?
Yes, and our relationship is stronger than ever now after going through that. Like, John Warnell went through a lot in his life, but it's nothing compared to having to walk 16 miles like nothing. I did.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I got to the spot we were supposed to, but we just went very much the wrong direction. But it's like, you can't really complain because you're walking through this incredible, beautiful, scenic forest. And you're like, you know, there's worse places to have to be stuck. But mile 15, 16, that was brutal.
Yeah, probably slept good. How'd that feel taking off those shoes?
Oh, my goodness. That was like no feeling. I've never felt it. Like, I've not to brag, but I ran a half marathon once. This was harder on my feet.
Oh, without a doubt.
No doubt. Yeah.
All right, that sucks. I'm glad you made
Almost missed kickoff too.
Have you read anything about like how to survive if you get lost on the hike? Like, what would you have done if you actually got lost?
We had some water. I think you can call 911 from your cell phone from anywhere.
Okay.
I
don't know how, if you don't have service, how that works.
Well, I think it will like use satellite or something. Like, sometimes my GPS still works on my phone even when I don't have service. And I don't know how that works, but it does. So I think it's using that same signal to But we had water, a little bit of water, a hard boiled egg, a clementine, and a protein bar. I think we could have lasted a week at least.
Without a doubt. All right. Yeah. My personal pine tar, fuggin' Huggies diapers. Huggies shouldn't even be allowed to sell diapers, let alone make them. Huggies, we had a diaper party a while back when we were pregnant and we found out we were having a baby. You know, the girls do baby showers, guys do Huggies and Juggies.
We chugged beers, lots of them.
Chugged beers, yeah. And the kegs for pregs is another thing I've heard. The name needs to change because people only bought Huggies. So we have all these boxes of free Huggies. They're the worst diapers imaginable. And parents out here listening, you probably understand.
Friends who bought Danny the diapers listening.
Shame on you. Just buy Pampers. Pampers is the only brand you need to know. Pampers, if you want to sponsor the pod, we will allow it. But this is not a sponsored post. Hashtag not an ad. Pampers, just go with Pampers. Only buy Pampers. Huggies are trash.
What's wrong with Huggies?
Kevin, I don't have time. Kevin, they're too stretchy. They try to make it easier for you to put on. But you change.
I like stretching my pants.
You change 8 diapers a day. It doesn't need to be easy. You'll get good. Whatever it is, you'll get good at it. Just make them more secure. The blowouts constantly. They don't fit right. They're awful. So keep
Maybe
it.
Maybe you should tell James to do some squats, and they'd fit better.
Yeah, he's He doesn't have much quads.
He must have already missed Squattober. So
yeah,
you better get on. But
just all you new parents out there, if you like Huggies, I'll fight you. just buy your friends Pampers. We got to figure out something that rhymes like.
Pampers and Jampers.
Crampers.
Pampers and I don't know.
Yeah. We'll jampers, figure something out because it has to campers. Change. Huggies, can't
Pampers
be
and
it.
Campers, and we all go camping.
Or we drink Space Camper.
Oh. Yeah.
There we go. Space Camper IPA.
Pampers and. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There it is. Okay. Just Pampers only, please and thank you. If you like Huggies, I'm calling Tom Cruise and Minority Report on you for being showing pre-crime behavior.
All right, that is our personal pine tar this week. Next, Thanksgiving, round the corner. It's this week. We are going to go ahead and do the mixed plate of people you spend Thanksgiving with. So some, you know, we might be missing these people this year. So yes, it's good, good to reminisce on the people we usually spend Thanksgiving with. And I believe this is episode 82. So that means I get to go first.
Damn it. So this is like general characterizations of people. Yes. It's not like people Danny Ritz spends Thanksgiving with.
Mm-hmm.
This is not general. Personal. Friends, family listening to this, don't take it personally.
Yes.
I'm not talking about you. I promise. Wink, wink.
All right. My mixed plate of people you spend Thanksgiving with. I must be hungry because all of these are very food related.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with the gravy commander as my meat number one. This is the person in charge of making the gravy. This is a very, very important job,
mm-hmm.
and they better take it as serious as a commander in the army, because I don't want anybody messing up my gravy, and they usually like stand over it and protect it and don't let anybody touch it or mess with it, which I'm perfectly fine with, because I don't want everybody trying to come in there and, you know, make their own or throw something in there or add a little salt or pepper. It's like, mm-hmm. no, let the gravy commander do their job and show some respect. Thank you for your service, gravy commander.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's perfect, because my meat number one is whoever makes the turkey, because that person has unlimited amount of like, they just get showered with praise. They just get showered with praise, and they don't really have to do
it. Regardless of if it's good or bad.
No. The turkey could stink, and people would be like, oh, my gosh, thank you so much for cooking the bird this year. And, don't worry about it. You don't have to do any dishes. We'll get it. So being that person who cooks the turkey, you just get a free pass for everything else. Cleaning, whether mm-hmm. or not it's good or not. Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Yep. All right. Let's see. I'm going to go with my meat number two. I'm going to go a little bit off here with thinking Friendsgiving. And I'm thinking of the single friend who gets the party going Friendsgiving.
Yep.
Yes. So this person, you know, it's the holiday season. You know, they're single. They're just like, maybe bringing a personal box of wine, and mm-hmm. that's their contribution, and they're going to drink the whole thing, and they're going to get the party started, and be the very fun person to be with at that Friendsgiving.
Okay. My meet number two, this is pretty simple. Your parents.
Okay. Your parents will be there.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just nothing quite like, drinking a bottle of wine, you're at your parents' house, you've got your shoes off, so you're in just your socks, and you're just drinking wine. The kitchen is really warm because, like, every stovetop is on and mm-hmm. both ovens are on. So the kitchen's warm, but you just got some wine, and you're probably drinking their wine, so you're drinking for free, and it's just the best feeling ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good one. All right. Man, you must have grown up in a nice house. Two ovens. Jeez, man. Times were good for you. All right. I'm going to go with my side number one to be the, the bad plate maker. This person upsets me.
Okay.
The bad plate maker. I judge people's plates, and the people who are like, literally just meat or just meat and potatoes, or maybe they're a vegetarian, they don't even have any meat on their plate.
Yes.
Like, I am looking at how people build their plates. Maybe they build their plates poorly and they put like the gravy down first, and also are a serial killer. Like, I don't know. Like, or maybe they don't put gravy on everything. Like, I'm just judging every move you're making
mm-hmm.
while building your plate.
I'm
an engineer when it comes to building a Thanksgiving plate, and so I'm judging your plate.
Yeah, if you don't make your plate exactly like me, then it's the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. All right, my side number one, I'm going with the friend you didn't intend on seeing out at the bar on Wednesday before, but on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, but you run into them anyways. So this is like a friend from high school or a friend from grade school who you absolutely had no intention of seeing, but you see them and maybe you just give a wave. Maybe you try to hide from them and you go to a different spot in the bar and just completely try to hide from them. Or maybe you end up like getting blitzed with them and doing shots at the bar afterwards and saying how much you miss, you know, Miss Tierney's fifth grade social studies class. I don't know. So that is the friend that you didn't intend on seeing, but you run into him at the bar.
Yeah. And who knows? They might end up crashing on your couch or something.
That's happened.
Yeah, that could happen. All right. Let's see. I'm going to go with my meet number two here, or my side number two. I'm going to go with the show off. The show off young person. And this person is young, and they made a fancy side dish to bring to Thanksgiving, and I didn't. And so now you're just making me look bad, you asshole. Like,
I thought you were going to say.
Oh, I was going to say, like, yeah, it's that person who's like, all right, well, now you're putting our generation out there to like having to contribute to Thanksgiving dinner now. Or else I'm just going to look like a bum because I'm not going to make a dish. But now people my age are now bringing dishes. So,
yeah.
Thanks for showing off.
I thought you were going to say the young people showing off because they can just eat whatever they want and they don't gain any weight or have consequences. All right. My side number two, I'm going with the grandparent who maybe you have a new relationship with because you're older and they don't treat you like a little kid anymore. And so you get to have real conversations with your grandparents now that you didn't get to have when you were younger. So I enjoy those interactions.
Yeah, definitely. Like getting on that peer level.
Yes.
With aunts and uncles, grandparents, is very, very nice. I left off the amateur bartender. That's the guy I want to be with.
Yeah.
You know, who's making up some cocktails. There's the old guy who falls asleep. That's classic.
That's a classic.
Gets
guy.
A little turkey at him, and then the Sunday night football comes on and he's snoozing. And then the turkey carver is someone I'm jealous of, but also like I don't want
to
do that.
That's well, if you can, if you only have to carve it and you don't have to cook it, like then I can get down with that. But it seems very difficult.
Yeah. Any left off your list?
I have Wonderfuzz on here because Wonderfuzz is the band that plays at Kelly's because Snapchat memory from 3 years ago, I had just gotten engaged and we went to Kelly's and it was the night before Thanksgiving. And Kelly or Wonderfuzz drummer let me hold the cowbell while he drummed on the cowbell for Honky Tonk Woman. And it was maybe the most important moment of my entire life. And yeah,
that was big.
You know, it was Thanksgiving, spending it with the people you're most
thankful
for.
It was technically past midnight, so it was Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And people you're most thankful for in your life. And that's Wonderfuzz, the band, and a cowbell.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Wonderfuzz. That's who, actually, if you stick around and listen to the end of the episode, that's the Wonderfuzz you're listening to. All right. So thanks again to Kim for joining us. That'll wrap things up for us this week. Next episode is going to come out in December, Dan. Where'd the time go?
Sheesh.
I know. All right. So thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on social media at StateYourLine, StateYourLine.com. We'll see you around Kansas City.
Everything's color. Everything, you know, is, oh, it must be too low.